really good. Okay, good morning to everyone and welcome. We're in day number five, our last day, and I trust that everybody has a pen and everybody has their book, and we're going to get going. I want to let you know that on your way out, feel free to grab and take with you a couple flyers. It's easy to give this to somebody who, you know, hasn't been here and just say, hey, you know, this is the series that's available. You may think of somebody that you know around the United States, and you could email them and send them the link, and, you know, they don't know me, but they know you. And then the other thing is I wanted you to know that on the website, which is on the back of the book, BibleStudyLessonPlans.com, there's many, many free things, and one of the free things is our monthly newsletter. And so for the last 2.5 years, we have put out a monthly newsletter called Dynamics of Discipleship. It's free. You just have to subscribe. So you go on and subscribe with your email. We have just under 1,800 emails that we send it to every month now, and about 4 of them actually open the newsletter. No, just kidding. I think there's actually 6. But anyway, oh man. Anyway, you know how people subscribe to stuff and, you know, whatever. But anyway, it has grown every month, and we've been very grateful that people have wanted to, you know, and I try to say something profound once a month, and with Peggy's help, it actually happens. So there we go. Okay. Well, Jesus saves us by his grace and then calls us into a relationship with him, and just like a parent who wants a child to grow up, Jesus is not, like a parent, content for us to just stop at a certain point. No parent would let his child stop at the third grade and say, well, that's enough. Third grade's fine. You know, if you have a third grade education, we'll just level it off right here, and we don't expect you to go to fourth, fifth, or sixth. No parent would do that. So Jesus has these loving expectations just like a parent. And so he expects us to come and to follow and to pray and to love. And today, he expects us to continue to learn how to trust him. So we're on page number 19. Page number 19, lesson 5, trust, letting Jesus lead. And Timmery will read our introduction. So you follow along on page 19. Here we go. Now, in my opinion, of all of the 5 lessons, this is the lesson that is the most un-American. And the reason it's so un-American is that in our culture of the United States of America, we love control. And so when you say we're going to trust Jesus with our future, it simply means releasing control of our future. And that is kind of unnatural. That is un-American. It's very counterintuitive, because we believe in our culture that everybody has the right to choose their own future destiny, to be what they want to be. And this notion that I'm going to just give my entire future years to someone else and let him be in charge and let him lead my life, not a lot of social reinforcement for that. I would humbly remind you that there is no, in the Bible, there is no record of a God-fearing person who chose the life he wanted and then informed God of the decision. It was not Noah's idea to build the ark. It was not Moses' idea to go back to Egypt. It was not Jonah's idea to go to Nineveh. It was not Mary's idea to be the mother of the Son of God. Can you imagine Mary as a little junior high girl telling her teacher, I know what I want to be when I grow up. I'd like to be the mother of the Son of God. That's my dream. See, that concept hadn't entered Mary's mind. Nobody, no one is the leading character in the story of their life. And in the Bible, there is no record of a God-fearing person who chose the life he wanted and then informed God of the decision. Every once in a while, somebody comes to me and says, because they've heard me teach these lessons or something, and they say in a complimentary tone, Paul, I think you missed your calling. And they say that because they know that I sell insurance, because doing these lessons is not my job. I have a financial planning practice, and I sell, and I've done that for years and years. Well, I know what they mean when they say, I think you missed your calling, but here is, if they give me a chance to tell them a little bit more about my view of my life, this is what I say as to how I know that I'm right where God wants me to be. When I was in the 10th grade, I went to a church camp. And at the church camp, as a 10th grader, we had these cabins where there was about 12 boys in the cabin, and there was one man that was the cabin dad. And at the end of every evening, before we went to sleep, because we had Monday or Sunday through Friday or whatever, 5 nights, he said, we're going to have an evening devotion before we go to sleep, and we're going to read through the book of James that has 5 chapters, and we're going to read 1 chapter a night. Well, the very first chapter was a chapter, the very first chapter of James had a verse in it that I had never heard. I don't remember as a 10th grader ever even knowing it was in there. It's chapter, James chapter 1, verse 27, that says, pure religion before God our Father is this, to take care of widows and orphans in their distress and to keep oneself unstained from the world. Well, as a little 10th grader, I thought, wow, pure religion. Pure religion is to look after widows and orphans. That, well, I don't know what that means, but sounds to me like God really kind of has his eye on widows and orphans. About 10 years ago, I had a client who came up to me and said, I was in an antique store and I found a book and it made me think of you, and so I bought it. And the name of the book was The History of Prudential, which is the insurance company that I've worked with. And it was printed in 1950, and the book was called The History of Prudential, 1950. It was the 75-year anniversary of the company, and this was the book that basically that's told the story. So this lady says, it was only 50 cents and I thought you were worth it, so I just went ahead, took the plunge, you know, said, well, I don't want you to set yourself back, you know. So I'm reading through the history of Prudential, and I found out that John Dryden, the founder of Prudential, actually started the company 2 years before 1875, in 1873. And the original name of the company was the Widows and Orphans Friendly Society.
Wow!
And on that day, I immediately remembered the evening devotions at church camp when I was in the 10th grade. And then it all, my whole life, kind of just came together. And I knew that I was exactly where I was supposed to be, and that God had planted a seed in my life back when I was 15 years old, and I finally realized the Widows and Orphans Friendly Society is the company that I need to sell for, and had been selling for, but just was not aware of it. So this is what we're talking about, that we trust that Jesus knows what he's doing. And we just trust that he knows more than we know, and that he is the leader of our life, not just our Savior, but he is our leader, and we can follow him because he's the only one that knows the future. And so, so when it comes to this expectation, we just must accept the fact that Jesus is training us to not only trust him with all of our heart, which means all of our future plans, he is training us to trust him one day at a time. One day at a time. Jesus goes slow, and he only doles out our life one day at a time. So we don't get in a hurry to say what's going to happen next month, next year. No, we just live one day at a time and let Jesus lead. Now, the passage we will use for this is on page 20. John chapter 21, verse 15 through 22. Everybody turn to page 20 and follow along. When they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you truly love me more than these? Yes, Lord, he said, you know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my lambs. Again, Jesus said, Simon, son of John, do you truly love me? He answered, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus said, take care of my sheep. The third time he said to Simon, to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him a third time, "Do you love me?" He said, "Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you." Jesus said, "Feed my sheep. I tell you the truth, when you were younger, you dressed yourself and you went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go." Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. And then he said to him, "Follow me." Peter turned and saw the disciple whom Jesus loved was following them. This was the one who had leaned back against Jesus at the supper and had said, "Lord, who is going to betray you?" When Peter saw him, he asked, "Lord, what about him?" Jesus answered, "If I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? You must follow me." The two keys to trusting Jesus are, number one, we attach ourselves to a person. We don't attach ourselves to a plan or a cause or an organization or a church. We don't attach ourselves to a place. We attach ourselves to a person. And then that person leads us where he wants us to go. And number two, we learn to refuse. We refuse to compare ourselves to other people. Those are the two aspects of trust that we're going to look at today. We attach ourselves to a person, not a place, not a church, not a cause, not a field. And number two, we refuse to compare ourselves with others. So let's unpack the first point. First things first. Page 20, Timory will read. And we'll thank you. Now, let me just elaborate just a little bit on two key ideas. Because of the grace that God gives all of us, the failures in our life are not final. And in Peter's particular situation, he failed huge. He denied knowing Jesus three times, but that did not derail him from fulfilling and experiencing God's destiny for our life. And that is a consistent pattern throughout the entire Bible, that our failures are not final. God has a way of working through the failures and still using us in some way. I just think it's ironic that Moses at the age of 40, the Bible says Moses at the age of 40 thought that everyone would recognize that God, by his hand, was going to deliver the children of Israel out of Egypt, and he physically killed an Egyptian and then buried the guy in the ground to try to hide the body. Well, it gets exposed. He's sent into the wilderness for 40 years. Now he's 80 years old. Now he's ready. God sends him back to Pharaoh. They lead the children of Israel out of Egypt. God does through Moses. They get to Mount Sinai and God gives Moses the Ten Commandments. And the sixth commandment is, "Thou shalt not murder." And it was a murderer that delivered the commandment, "Thou shalt not murder." How amazing is that? God used a murderer to hand to the people the Ten Commandments, one of which was, thou shalt not murder. The Apostle Paul was the persecutor of the church, and he became an apostle of grace, an apostle who understood forgiveness and its depths. Peter denied knowing Jesus three times, but Peter was used as a great preacher and a great leader. So, when you sit at the feet of Jesus and you say, "Lord, I'm disqualified for something great in your kingdom because of this failure." Well, everybody, story after story in the Bible will basically say that's not true. That Jesus will say, "No, there is still a purpose and a plan and a place for you." Enoch was mentioned in this story as a person who walked with God. In fact, in the book of Genesis, it says that Enoch walked with God. In the book of Hebrews, it says Enoch pleased God. I find it comforting to know that apparently Enoch didn't even begin walking with God until he was 65. Talk about waiting a while to get with it. So the Bible says Enoch was 65 years old, and then Enoch walked with God 300 years, and then God took him and took him straight to heaven, he was no more. And then in Hebrews chapter 11, it says that Enoch pleased God. I find it amazing that the Bible never tells us what Enoch did. What did he accomplish? Who knows? We have no clue. A man that walked with God for 300 years, pleased God, and was taken straight to heaven, and he didn't even die, we don't even know what he accomplished. So there's our example. That our relationship with God is much more important than anything we think we might accomplish for God. And we don't have to worry about how what we think we're accomplishing for God. We just walk with Jesus. And he does his work through us, and we don't worry about it. First things first, our relationship with God comes ahead of anything that we think we're doing for God. Now, the discussion questions on page 20 are right there under Let's Talk About It. How? All righty. Now, we'll kind of stay in your areas, but if you want to turn your chair around, we'll get to point two, and then we'll go back to our little discussion groups. So first things first, get the relationship with Jesus nailed down, and then don't worry about how he's going to use us. Just work on make sure first things are first. All right, the second part is on page 21. Stay in your lane. And
drive.
Yes, it's very wise advice if you're in a car. Stay in your lane. Timory, here we go. Okay, thank you, Timory. I'm amazed in our culture and in my life how easy it is and easy it has been for my self-esteem, for our self-worth, for just the way we see ourselves to be based on other people. I could tell you stories for hours about how this has been experienced in my own life, so I won't take hours, but I'll just take a few minutes. I remember when I was in junior high school, I never felt like I was a very good student. I've never personally felt like my IQ, in the certain IQ sense, you know, was strong enough to, you know, measure up and compete with other people. And so whenever I got my paper back when I was in the junior high, I never looked to see what I got. I just looked at my neighbor and said, "What'd you get?" Because my sense of okayness about what score on the test I got was going to be measured by what you got. And I felt a lot better if I got an F and you got an F, then we both got an F. And now I'm feeling like, you know, this is really good. I remember when I met Peggy as a freshman in college and we started dating each other, you know, we started finding out about each other. And I found out that Peggy was number two in her high school graduating class. Well, I was ranked 222nd in my graduating class out of about 600 and some. And then Peggy ranked number two in her college class when she graduated. And I ranked about 63rd out of about 90. So again, not neck and neck with with Peggy, if you know what I mean. I'm just very conscious of this difference. When Crystal was born, she ended up inheriting all this from Peggy. In fact, she wrote a paper for her fifth grade teacher, and the paper was called My Personality. And on the paper, Crystal wrote, "As a 10-year-old, I inherited a singing talent from my mother and my father, but I got my intelligence from my mom's side of the family." I remember when Crystal was a junior in high school, I will forever remember the day that we were sitting at the kitchen table and starting her junior year. She had, in high school, 9th grade, 10th grade were behind her. She hadn't gotten any, everything was an A. And so she looked at Peggy and she said, "Mom, how would you feel about me being valedictorian?" Now, can you pick on the fact that I was sitting there and the question was not addressed to me? So I'm, you know, looking at the two of them going, I'll be in the family room if, let me know if you need some advice or input. I'll be next in the next room. So we simply just cannot hear this message enough. Comparing ourselves with other people is unwise because we are always comparing ourselves to the wrong standard. Other people are not the standard. Jesus did not call us to be like other people. He called us to be like Him. And like Him does not mean as smart as He is, because none of us are ever going to be as smart as Jesus, but we're going to be like Him in His character. The fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, that is what being like Jesus is. So granted, comparing ourselves with other people is so natural. It's so easy to do. We all have done it. We all do it. But we must guard against it because we're always using the wrong standard. I remember that when I was a young adult, there was a youth pastor named Dick Alexander that I idolized. I thought Dick Alexander was the greatest thing since sliced bread. And I idolized him so much that I would talk like him. I would act like him. I memorized the things that he said, and then I would say the very same things that he said. I just imitated him and mimicked him in every possible way. And one day, some people who kind of thought he had gone overboard told Dick about it, and Dick sat down with me. And I'll never forget, he said, Paul, I want you to go home to your town, and I want you to forget about me. You are a good enough person to just be the person God made you. You don't have to be me. You be you. There is a preacher named R.T. Kendall, who was the pastor of the Westminster Chapel in London. Westminster Chapel, Cathedral, Westminster Church. And from 1973 to 1998, for 25 years. And in a book on spiritual leadership, he wrote, to be myself is about the hardest thing I've ever sought to do. And I loved reading that because there was one more person who I respected greatly who just admitted the truth. To be myself is one of the hardest things that I've ever sought to do. So we don't worry about other people. We are just content with ourselves. We accept ourselves and all of our limitations. And we know that Jesus has. And we humbly accept the life that Jesus has given us. Now, why don't you talk about that on the discussion questions on page 21. Now, time to move on. Come down the final stretch here. So please turn to page number 22. Page number 22, the last word. Along with her husband and children, Ella Spies worked as a missionary in Africa for 52 years. She left her country, her family, and all that was familiar. Primitive doesn't begin to describe her living conditions in the scorching heat and humidity of the African bush. But Ella found no relief because electricity, air conditioning, and other modern conveniences were only a dream. Some days were so unbearably hot that she had to bring the thermometer inside because it couldn't register past 120 degrees without breaking. Her life was truly a series of hardships. How did she remain content? Ella knew that her peace came from Jesus, not her ability to control or fix everything around her. She trusted in a sovereign God. She was called to someone, not something or somewhere. An old diary revealed her secret. Never allow yourself to complain about anything, not even the weather. Never picture yourself in any other circumstances or someplace else. Never compare your lot with another's. Never allow yourself to wish this or that had been otherwise. Never dwell on tomorrow. Remember that tomorrow is God's, not ours. God designed you to live the life He gave you. Your assignment is not someone else's. Accept each day just as it comes to you. Instead of regretting or resenting the way things are, rejoice that a loving and sovereign God is with you right here, right now. Make Jesus your treasure and stay in your lane. There's a man named Tim Hansel, who is the founder of an organization called Summit Adventure. And years ago, I heard him say, life is not a problem to be solved, but a journey to be lived. And that really helped me, and I thought it goes with what Ellis Bies said. Life is not a problem to be solved. Life is a journey to be lived. Because there's difficulties and problems built into every day. And so our privilege as followers of Jesus is not that we live in a trouble-free world or a problem-free world. Our privilege is that we live in a God-with-us world. We are living every day, every moment of every day, with someone. We are never alone. God is with us. He is leading us. He is with us right here, right now. Now, in the final few minutes, I would like you to look at the little black box, the square on page 22. The question is, what I